Hey, Matt. I think everybody's in attendance, and if that's the case, it is 6:03, and we're going to call to order the February 1st, 2022 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission. We'll start with a roll call. I'll have Mary Talbot Rabiano.
Here.
Matt Bradywood. Matt, I think you're muted. I think you're muted, Matt. There you go.
Unmuted and here.
Good, good. Lorraine Joubert. No comment. Okay, Chris O'Connor.
Here.
And Vern Wyman.
Here.
Great. Our first order of business is the approval of minutes for the December 7th, 2021 meeting. Does anybody have any thoughts on it? Any changes, additions, that kind of thing? Anybody? All right, I'll accept the motion to approve the minutes.
A motion to approve the minutes.
Mary Rabiano moved. Anybody second?
I will second.
Thanks, Vern. Vern Wyman seconded. And further discussion, hearing none, all of wanting to approve the minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Under old business, we have a further discussion of the aquifer and water quality protection. Jay, thank you for sending on the GPOD info. That was really good. And also the North Kingstown info. To me, not knowing, this is really the first I had read of the GPOD ordinance or overlay district. And I thought it was pretty thorough. I do know that Lorraine mentioned last meeting that it hasn't been updated in quite a while, but I don't know where to begin on what updates would be appropriate. Mary, do you have any thoughts? Or Lorraine, do you have any thoughts? You're muted, Lorraine, you're muted. Lorraine,
I'm late.
That's okay, no, it's okay. So I was just talking about the GPOD, which I had really never read before. And I remember that you had said it hasn't been updated in quite a while. Do you have any thoughts on what should be updated?
I think there are some things, but I just haven't had time to look at it. Okay. You know, I don't think there's anything that desperately needs changing. We actually haven't had that many applications. There hasn't been that much development activity in the GPOD. But I'm currently working with a couple of other towns on updating their ordinances. And North Kingstown in particular has asked for some help in looking at what other towns are doing, which is I was kind of resisting doing that. But over the next month, I will be looking at other towns' ordinances and comparing them to ours. So I think I'll have more information next time.
Well, if you could keep Jay and me, you know, updated to that, to what you're doing, so that we would know when to, if not in March, in April, when to put it on the agenda.
Sure.
So we can get in. Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is improving the stormwater standards in the aquifer so that we maintain recharge a little bit better. But I keep on hearing those subdivision regulations with stormwater requirements are still in the works. Might be useful to know where the town is with that.
But Lorraine, from if you're working with North Kingstown, have they really been operating with a very minimalistic approach?
No, they have one of the best regulations among, you know, in the state. They have a nutrient loading requirement where you have to calculate the nutrient loading of nitrogen to groundwater, which no one else has. But they're a little bit unique in that they have a lot of heavily developed areas in their wellhead areas, you know, the Route 1 district and Frenchtown Road area. It's heavily developed as opposed to, you know, our West Kingston site. Certainly the stormwater provisions in the groundwater regs, in the groundwater ordinance that we have needs to be updated.
Okay.
Well, keep us apprised so that we can, you know, get into it.
I definitely will.
Getting on to new business, I have an application for a special use permit, is it, for having a septic system within 150 feet of a wetlands, and is the applicant here? Talk.
Yeah, I'm just bringing her in.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Yep. Amy Saunder for Brenna and Earl Sharp for a new lot development on Parkwood in West Kingston. Would you like me to proceed?
Please. Okay.
So we have a, has everybody had a glance at the site plans?
Yes.
We have a, thanks Jay, a lot, as you can see on Parkwood, it was undeveloped. We had it flagged last winter and soils testing done last winter. We received a 24-inch water table. As you can see, there's two test hole locations there where the septic system is on the lower right portion of the parcel or lower front portion. And they reached 24 inches, which is adequate for development by RIDEM for a septic system without variances. Actually, 18 inches is allowed and we received 24 inches. We proposed a geomatrix system. It's, I'm not sure if you've seen it before, but it's a new system that integrates stone and sand, and the stone is fingered into concrete sand. It's been very, it's a great system. It's about the size of a bottomless sand filter, but the advantage is that it's all below grade. You can cover it with grass, and it's not obviously visible at the surface. And then we've proposed a pretreatment system at Vantex, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, and that is located just to the left in the middle of the lot there. We did submit this to DEM as a joint application and received no concerns with the OWTS portion. There was a little bit of back and forth with the wetland portion of the application, and we basically reduced the size of the home and the setback area around the home to 10 feet. Also, just we did have a deck on the right-hand side of the house, and we just left the one small deck area off the back because this site would be perfect for a walkout type of area. So the main living space would be one story higher in the back. So we have one small deck area to access the back portion of the lot. I do show the two existing structures on each side of the lot, one septic system to the east. As you can see there, they have a bottomless sand filter that was approved. I did not locate the septic system on the westerly portion, but I would anticipate that it's in the back of the lot via where the wetlands are located and the general site conditions that I did note there. And we're before you because of your overlay district or your setback to the wetland area. I don't know if anybody has any questions, but we'd like to receive some recommendation, I think, to go forward to the zoning board.
You mean planning
board? I'm wondering where the second rain garden is.
Did I refer to two? Because there were two at one point in time. I had one on that, on the northeasterly side of the house and on the other side. And then when we reconfigured everything, we just put that, I'm sorry, back to the left northwesterly side because it was taking up too much room. So it was advised to put it to the left.
So that one meets the volume requirement?
Correct. At one point in time, I had a narrow swale going across the whole back of that, thinking that it would be great to grab it. But with space, with them pulling the setback in, we just kept it to that one area, which okay. is actually outside of the buffer.
Okay.
Amy, I had one question. I admit to being pretty ignorant about rain gardens in general, but mm-hmm. looking at the separate drawing you have of them, my first reaction was the tree is certainly planted way too deep, and I just don't know how it could live like that, particularly if there's water, you know, up to a third of the trunk. Could you explain that for me?
Well, I think you're going to be looking at any type of tree that can withstand, you know, water. Where it can be anything. It might not be as much of a tree as my picture envisions. It could be any type of shrub or berry bush that would accommodate a rain garden or survive with saturated roots.
But for instance, the shrubs seem to be planted at just the right height where the flare starts, but the tree starts out way too deep as far as can get the mulch in the soil.
Yeah, I don't know if that's me and/or I don't know. I'll have to look at that, to be honest. I'm not sure if that's something that I did in my drafting, but I'm pretty sure these I have taken from the Coastal Resource Rain Garden. I can take a look at that. At this point in time, I don't think we have any trees. This is a typical detail. There's some plants being specified that DEM required us to put in. So those are specified on my detail there. And I don't think I have any actual trees, winterberry, holly, swamp azalea, high bush blueberry, things like that. So I'm not sure, but I will look at that. That could be me, or I can look at the Coastal Resource, how they show that.
Could you, before going to the planning board, also include a kind of a sidebar with the South Kingstown planting specs for trees?
Sure.
That would be great, because we're trying to standardize, you know, these specs, and they're right there in the subdivision regulations. It would be great if you would. I think the planning board may, you know, call your attention to it as well.
On my site or the proposed trees?
I'm thinking on the drawings that we're looking at, if you could also just have a sidebar with the South Kingstown planting specs. I don't know if that's possible or not. I mean,
I'm not sure how detailed they are or how big they are. I mean, I submit them or put them into my plans. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, just something that when you go to the planning board, this is, you know, I acknowledge that that's what we're going to be doing.
Okay. And it's going to the zoning board
just for clarification, this is an advisory to the zoning board.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Amy, was the wetland edge verified by DEM?
They went out there, they made comments, but it was done as a preliminary determination with DEM, but they did look and made comments of the wetland flagging, yes. I think
and
I
were they okay? They were okay with it?
Yeah, I had it flagged by Kathy Mangan, yes.
But it wasn't verified by DEM, right?
No, they didn't do an edge verification, no.
Do you think it's needed?
She did look at the flags, and she did refer to flag areas and items in there. So I know they were on site and saw the flags. I staked out the limited disturbance in the dwelling. So it's such a small site. I think if they had an issue with the flags, it would have been noted.
Okay. I noticed the impervious cover is pretty low, but but that the wetlands were included in the calculation, which is not appropriate.
Okay.
Do you think you could recalculate the impervious cover subtracting the wetland?
Sure.
It might still be under 15, but I just didn't have the data to figure it out myself.
Do you want that right now, or you want me to just get that for future?
I mean, as long as if we approved it, it would be based on the impervious being met.
Yeah, I think the only impervious is actually the house.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So the house is 960. And I think I have calculated.
I think the driveway was included in the calculation.
Was or was not? I don't think
I thought it was, which if it's rock, it wouldn't need to be.
Hang on one second. I think I put those numbers on the application.
Yeah, I saw them somewhere.
Okay, so right here I have 960 patio. I did do the driveway at 600, even though it wasn't pervious. Impervious. Total was 20,000. So I would have to get on and calculate that total impervious area, 1600. So it's actually less than that. But I'd have to get in the computer and calculate that upland area or suitable land area, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hang on a second. I know I did that with my communication back and forth with DEM. So that you're saying take out the actual wetland.
Right, the wetlands should not, wetland area would not be included.
I can get that. I mean, if you want to make it pending that number, Jay,
okay,
that I verify less than 15%.
Okay. It seems reasonable that it would meet that 15 given how low it is now.
It does, but I don't want to say that for sure without
checking. Right. Yep, I understand.
If I could, I noticed in the requirements of DEM that a fence and posts that reflected signage pertinent to the wetland edge was required. I don't know but I don't see any detail showing of what that is. I know it and how prominent it is.
Yeah, I don't have the details, a detail of that. I do specify the 4x4 post locations on the plan. And they do say that they have to be 24 inches above grade with a sign on them. That determination has been recorded in the land evidence records and will be part of any piece of this property. I think now that they're actually requiring that this be done prior to any construction on the site.
Okay.
I'd have to reread that, but I'm pretty sure that now DEM is stipulating that be implemented before the start of any construction.
Yes, it would seem like a very good practice so that that boundary is known to everyone involved.
Correct.
Regardless of their familiarity with the drawing. So,
I have them at every angle point on there. And there is a smaller area right to the north of the leaching field that is going to be replanted, but not part of that buffer limitation.
I see. And does that pass on? In other words, it's going into the land evidence records, so it becomes a requirement that it be maintained even if these folks sell this house in the future.
Correct.
Yeah, good.
Yep.
Amy, David Flanders here. I had a question on the arborvitae plantings. They're going to be about 6 feet high after planting, be planted 8 to 10 feet on center. These are very rapidly growing trees, and they grow to be large. I would suggest increasing the distance between them to at least 10 to 15 feet, if not more. Because what happens when their branches intermingle, they just kill themselves off because they don't get any more light, and you get dead branches, and they don't allow for full root growth, which is what you're really looking for in right. order to be a barrier to the wetlands. So I would say, I would be happy with 20 feet between.
Yeah, there was a actual stipulation, and you can barely see it right there to the right, proposed additional plantings.
Yep.
The biologist had said the arborvitae, and I think she does that actually because it really demarcates the line, it gets so thick.
Yeah, yep.
But I do think that DEM, and we can look into that, almost wanted more of a smattering of different vegetation there, as you can see where they asked me to propose that was per DEM, the winterberry holly bush.
Right. Burnham. Variety would be good. I agree. Yep.
So maybe
acknowledge that these are big trees,
right,
and they grow rapidly. And unless there were a plan to planting it this way, and then after 5 years, removing every other one, that kind of thing, because, just because of that factor.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a problem with it. Unfortunately, this was what was verified by DEM. So I don't know how to, at that point in time, either go back to them and say, to be totally honest, I don't think they would have a problem if we integrated other plants and did some arborvitae and did the other wetland plantings there. My familiarity with these applications is they're not coming out, and as long as it's demarcated and planted, they're really not giving clients or developers much of a hard time as long as it's vegetated.
Yep. I'm just looking for the maximum root, development as we can get.
Yeah.
So shrubs with berries, for birds and other wildlife would be good.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And so but keeping a dense arborvitae border to, prevent light and other impacts from reaching the wetlands would be great too.
Intermixing in there, and maybe if you are going to make recommendations, if we put that in there, it could be something that's part of the zoning decision.
Yeah.
So that it does get implemented, and then somebody is made aware of it.
Good. Does anybody else have any more comments about this application?
It looks like a lot of the driveway is pretty wide. Do you think, it seems like it's just over 20 feet. Is it possible to keep it to 20 feet? Because the standards for two lane driveways are about 19 feet. It's a lot of pavement right there.
That is no pavement. It's only gonna be stone.
Oh, but for gravel.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like.
I did this is because we are moving the house. We shifted the house so close, going for dimensional relief. And I just put that extra area because I have a feeling there's not going to be any place to really, like a kick out or a back out. So whether this gets built just like this, I don't know. I'm sure if they could narrow up that curb cut. Is that what you're talking about? The widening of the entrance or the actual widening of the driveway?
The actual width of the house, of the driveway where it's kind of in front of the house.
Yeah, I would
just. Seems like the neighbor might not be happy to have a big house and driveway right on their border.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons. There is a wall going through, which is unfortunate, right through that. You can see it says stone wall, and I've actually proposed that to be relocated to the left to demarcate it. It is pretty vegetated, but both those driveways will be pretty close.
So the rock wall would be on the border of the property then?
Correct. Yep,
demarcated. Okay. Yeah.
So, but I do think that this is, although it may be a bit wide, something that may be needed because there's such a short distance between the house and the road.
Right.
Amy, is it 23 feet from the house to the road?
We're proposing, yes, 23 feet. and the requirement is 35 on this particular zone. So it's quite.
So you're planning to, with zoning, you're planning to request
frontage relief.
Dimensional variance and a special use?
Yes.
But it's meeting, oh yeah, it's meeting the 15-foot side requirement.
Correct.
Yeah, can you
any closer to the left?
Yep. Can you explain just a little bit more the geomatrix? I'm not familiar with that.
Jay, I don't know if you can go to that, the upper right portion of the plan there. Yep. I'm not sure if you have, there you go. So, yeah, actually that detail just to the bottom, that's almost on the bottom half of the screen there, right? So you see those fingered stones. So this is actually a new system that has probably been around for a year or maybe 18 months. And those fingers are, you know, larger size stone, inch, half inch, I think it says to I can't read my thing, but.
Oh yeah, half to three quarter.
Yeah, and that those are put in by these, held in by a frame, and then concrete sand is poured in around it. So you have that aggregate in the fingers, and it's the filtration has been working very well. And the footprint of this system is extremely small, which is very much like the bottomless sand filter, but as I said, not at grade. You know, the maintenance is better because it's all below ground. You're not having to keep it clean and the timbers and all of that. So, and
how does the
aesthetic value?
How does the footprint size compare to a geomat system?
It's very similar to the geomat. It's still a little smaller than the geomat. It depends on the configuration, and these come in different sizes. This is a wider size geomatrix. They have a smaller one as well. So there's different sizes, but it's very similar, and it's by the same company. It's very similar to the geomat. I just like this better because it's stone. The geomats have been out and we have used a lot of those, but I always get concerned about putting the plastics and different types of materials in the ground.
Definitely. Cool. Yeah, I wasn't familiar with this one.
Yeah. I think you'll start to see quite a few of them, actually.
Does anybody else have any questions or concerns?
Yeah, I've got one more thing. Amy, did you, you might've addressed this right at the beginning, but it looks like the closest point, so 32 feet from the corner of the deck, but if we discount that, 36 feet to the house is the closest point to the wetland.
Correct.
Again, you may have addressed this already, but did so DEM requires 50 feet.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're okay with the 36 in this.
Yep. There's a 50-foot buffer, and when you go before DEM, they do allow alterations into the buffer, as you can see, as long as you mitigate things and do the least amount possible to obtain your proposed development. So there was some back and forth with DEM. You know, I did have other plans that, you know, it wasn't too excessive, but we had a garage on the left and there was a little bit more of that square box going into the wetland. And I think I had it as close to maybe 28 or something feet. And so there was a little give and take back and forth with DEM, and we got it down to this particular location. But they do allow it, yes. Obviously they want you to stay out of the 50 foot, but when it's impossible, they do.
Right.
Allow some, and obviously you can see with the plantings and things like that, we came to an agreement.
And what is the closest point? You know, 58 feet for the geomatrix. is the closest point. Okay.
I'm sorry, that, yes, 58 feet to the geo matrix. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One more question, Amy. Can you point out the actual limits of disturbance that will be on the erosion sediment control plan?
Basically, it's that vegetated green line, and it's hard to see on here, but it is a brown line that goes through those green arborvitaes.
Oh, I see it now. All right.
Yeah. Got it.
And those that's where those 4x4 posts will be.
All right. So you're going to use something fairly robust to actually keep the heavy equipment out of there rather than silt fence or something?
Well, a lot of people are using the silt socks, but yeah, maybe I actually think a silt fence is more defined maybe to help alleviate that. But as we said earlier, those 4x4 posts are going to have to be put in place before anything happens.
Okay.
So that is definitely going to keep them out of the way unless somebody wants to rebuilding the 4x4 posts with signs on them, which can get costly.
Yeah, that would be great as a limit of disturbance. And yeah. I do like the silt socks for sediment control better than silt fence. Just a matter of having a barrier, like a physical barrier.
Yeah, they're both, yeah, the silt fence is more visible, but the silt sock does do a good job.
Yeah, they work better.
They can, in the area, this is kind of a disturbed area. So there's been a lot of tree falling and there was some fill on the site in some areas. So I would anticipate that it'll be cleared out and they may double stack some silt fence, silt sock, just to keep it in place.
Okay.
Is the LOD currently staked? Are there stakes where those 4x4s are going to land, the post?
Some of it was staked and then it was changed. So on either side, I had staked the LOD when I initially applied to DEM. Some of the interior LODs, for example, around the house had been reduced. So it's not exactly where this LOD is now. The stakes that are out there are a little more towards the wetland. So they're even closer to the front of the site than if you went out there today. If you saw them, they're not accurate. How's that?
So you're planning to go out, stake out that LOD, and then presumably each of the places, it looks like nine spots are indicated to have 4x4 posts eventually. Is your plan to go and place a stake at each of those locations that will be replaced by the homeowner with a 4x4?
Before they can start construction, and you may miss that, it's part of the DEM approval that be staked before they can start construction. And we have to notify them now. I think it's a new procedure with DEM, which is good.
So the location of the posts will be staked, but the posts won't be installed?
No, I think the posts have to be installed, but I will stake those prior to.
Okay.
I don't think they can just go out and willy-nilly place them where they think they're supposed to go.
Okay.
No, I think the posts have to exactly indicate those. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Those locations.
One would hope that I will be contacted to stake those posts.
Fair enough.
Anything else to add or ask from anyone? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve or whatever. Matt, Lorraine, you want to make a motion?
Is there anyone from the public who do you have some attendees?
Thank you, Chris. Jay, does anyone have their hand raised?
I don't. Now, if anyone here from the public as an attendee would like to speak, please raise your hand.
Thank you.
I don't see anyone's hands being raised.
Okay. Again, I'll entertain a motion regarding this application to the zoning board.
Matt, I think you're muted.
Who?
Matt.
All right, let's try this again. I will recommend a motion to, or I will put forth a motion to recommend approval to the zoning board pending the confirmation that the impervious coverage still gets below that 15% number when recalculated to not include the wetland.
Right.
Is there anything else that anyone wanted to add as a stipulation?
The spacing of the arborvitae should be increased so as the branches don't interfere with the neighboring trees and result in the burnout of the branches, and also to increase root development.
Right. And also that the buffer zone markers, the posts for by the large posts will be installed per DEM requirements before construction begins to mark the limit of a disturbance, and that the silt sock will be installed at the limits of disturbance for sediment control. The stone wall will be relocated from its current position where it's going to be disturbed to the property boundary. And that otherwise, and that for the buffer plantings, shrubs that have value for birds and other wildlife will be integrated with the arborvitae, keeping a solid border of our arborvitae to avoid light and other impacts to the wetland. Otherwise, the applicant has moved the septic system and house as far away as possible from the wetland, and impacts have been minimized to the extent possible.
Go on, sorry.
Jay? Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to get clarification. We had a motion made by Matt.
Right.
Matt may need to amend his motion to incorporate all the suggestions made by others before it being considered.
Very good. Matt?
I will amend my motion to, do you want me to delineate each of those things?
No. You can just refer to them.
Well, I will amend my motion to include the comments made by Mr. Flanders and by Ms. Joubert.
Good.
Yeah.
So that is the motion made by Matt Bradywood. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Lorraine. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. It goes forward to the planning board. Thank you all.
Thank you. And I just realized, sorry, I thought my video was on, but sorry about that, everybody.
Not a problem.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to other new business. We're going to discuss whether we want to ask the town council to amend the plastic reduction ordinance to include 50 milliliter liquor bottles known as NIPS to also be prohibited in the ordinance. And I forwarded to you, I was going to encourage everyone to do some homework on this issue, but the issues that were raised by the Providence Journal article, which was forwarded to you, includes all those concerns. I just wanted to remind everyone that as we're the Conservation Commission, we have to stick to those issues that are within our purview. We cannot address drunk driving, for instance, but my talking points were that NIPS constitute a significant percentage of roadside litter. And those who do any walking or cycling will that's just an obvious fact. Their small size makes them more inconspicuous when being thrown out of a vehicle. Their small size makes them non-recyclable at our Johnson facility, resulting in more plastic being added to the landfill. Their small size makes them prone to be blown into storm drains and therefore being ingested by fish and wildlife as microplastics. So I would, if we decide to propose a letter to the council asking them to amend the ordinance, those are some points that I would include in a letter. So I just want to open the discussion to everyone here and see what you think.
I think that's good. So what if we recommend to the council to support an update of our own ordinance, but also comment to the state legislature to advocate for a statewide ordinance, because the problem is only going to be partially resolved if it's done on a town by town basis.
Yeah, I was curious to hear that in Massachusetts, I had originally heard that they actually had a statewide ban. And I learned that that was incorrect. It's done strictly municipality by municipality. And I've been talking to a number of people, by the way, friends of the Saugatucket and others. A lot of people are really focused on this issue and are picking them up on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And I think that doing it town by town might be more effective. In other words, it would lead in have an effect of snowballing. I would agree that we should definitely support any effort, but I don't think, seeing as how Rhode Island is so resistant to a bottle ban, even though Connecticut and Massachusetts have them, I think that could get stuck in committee for quite a while, as did for a few years the plastic reduction ordinance in the mm-hmm. first place. And yet we went ahead and did that. And I don't know if the state has yet to put a ban on a statewide ban on plastic bags. No. So I would agree that we should support it. I'm primarily focused on what is accomplishable at this point. I think it could be a separate thing. I guess we could put it in the same letter. I don't see any problem with that, but that's just my thinking. That's to the extent that I know anything about Rhode Island politics, sort of a narrow focus on my part.
No, I agree. A townwide ban is still an immediate solution for us, with the council continuing to support state legislation.
I also think it's a very hot topic right now. It's not just the Projo, it's just today in Eco Rhode Island News. There was a talk about a guy in Warwick went and picked up 96 of these things. Well, my friend and president of Friends of Saugatucket has been collecting the nips, and he has two of these large recyclable bins that you see around. And one of them was, there's a picture for you. One of them is dedicated to just South Kingstown. And that's what you're looking at. And it's about, he'll tell you how many hundreds it is. It's over 1,000. And then he has another bin for everything outside of South Kingstown. And it's very demonstrative. It makes for a good, it's a good photo shoot, but if it comes to a town council public hearing, he's going to bring the bin. I mean, it's this is a mission, and it's a very easy mission to fulfill because there are just so many. I only cover a 1 mile stretch of Curtis Corner Road, and it took me an hour just to get 25. And in addition to all the Bud Light beer cans and everything else, they're being inconspicuous is what makes it so easy to just throw it out the window. Right. And as I said, we can't mention that it's inconspicuous for drinking and driving, because that's not our purview. But as far as the ecological points, to me, the most worrisome isn't just the visual litter, it's getting down into the storm drains. I mean, that's just, that's really terrible. And the fact that they're not recyclable because of their size. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Jay.
Mr. McCusker is in the audience and he does have his hand raised. Would you like to hear a word from him?
I certainly would. It won't be just one.
Yeah. Hi, folks. I'm Bill McCusker. And just verify you can hear me.
Everybody yes.
Can hear me. Okay. I'm president of Friends of the Saugatuck. We have done river cleanups since our, in the last year, we hosted two of them. And I've been involved with numerous litter cleanups. And knowing that NIPS is one of the biggest problems that we find in the river, I decided to start collecting NIPS this past December. And what you're looking at are all plastic 50 milliliter and some 100 milliliter, but mostly 50 milliliter NIPS found off the streets of South Kingstown. I found them in Escapog, Millbridge, Snug Harbor, Peacedale, Wakefield, Green Hill, Tower Hill. I've been all over the town. I found them on the sidewalks, in the parks, in the rivers, and then mainly in the parking lots of liquor stores. This is the most common thing that we're finding in the river, because what David said, that they can fit through down a catch basin and make their way out to the river. In fact, we worked on a snag on the Saugatucket near the Muse Tavern, up from the Muse Tavern. And there were over 100 NIPS stuck up in that snag. So they're definitely making their way out to Point Judith Pond and out into the ocean. I said all that. They're, Massachusetts, as David said, they're doing this town by town. Chelsea, Newton, Wareham, and Mashpee have already banned the NIPS. And it sounds like that they have survived all the challenges that would be attached to them. So it's something that can be done. And it's something that I encourage. We try doing in South Kingstown. On Waits Corner Road alone, from Route 2 heading towards Sand Plains Road, there's a 100-yard section where we found a few, two and a half, 250 NIPS just in that stretch, along with other litter. But and it just is, this is a chronic problem, and they're everywhere. And I started collecting these after the leaves fell. So if I started before the leaves fell, I probably would have found a lot more of these things. So it's a problem anyway. Once you start seeing them on the side of the road, you can't help but see them on the side of the road. So I encourage you to help us out.
Bill, what is the, looking at just the South Kingstown lot, what did you actually count them, and what do you think the number is?
I did. Thank you for mentioning that. So I counted, I got a rough count. I counted how many NIPS fit in a 5-gallon bucket. And keep in mind that a lot of these are squished by cars too. So I counted them a few times and averaged out the number. And it's like 190 in a 5-gallon bucket. So what you're looking at is an average of 2,300 NIPS. 2,300 NIPS that came off the streets of South Kingstown since December. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And this is just not that South Kingstown's bad. It's where this is a representation of, I think, the whole state.
Yeah.
And I know that because the other bin that I have that's almost as full was outside of South Kingstown. So I think there's like 3,300 to 3,600 NIPS I have in my car under my carport right now. And happy to show it to anybody. But I intend on continue collecting these because I think the volume of NIPS that we can show is going to speak volume. In fact, we're going to have an Earth Day cleanup the day after Earth Day in April. And these, whatever I've collected, is going to be there for display. People need to see this for themselves.
Very good. I agree. Does anyone on the commission have any thoughts as to where we go from here?
So David, your strategy is to compose a letter to the council, encouraging them to amend the ordinance to.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I remember being told by former manager Rob Zarnetsky that the ordinance were, because at the time we expressed concern about plastic straws, and I would presume that that would include being stuck in the plastic covers to soft drink takeouts. He said, well, the ordinance was written in order to be amended. So, and this was, you know, run by our town legal counsel. And so I'm thinking it's not going to be a difficult process to actually enact this, but it would be the council that would amend the ordinance because they were the ones who approved it in the first place. So yeah, the process would be to ask them to amend it and include these talking points and any more that we can think of that would be appropriate from the Conservation Commission, you know, to do that.
That's serious.
I'll just remind you, we did at one point ask the council to amend the ordinance to put certain restrictions on the distribution of straws, plastic straws, which they declined to do. Okay. I'm just concerned about the viability of this where, and I would also remind you as well as the commission that there was the enactment of the ordinance, especially as it relates to plastic bags, was an extended period of time before it was embraced, and it wasn't embraced until many other towns had enacted the same type of ordinance.
Yep.
In this case, the concern, I suppose, just being devil's advocate and some of the issues that the council may raise, is that there are no other towns in the state that have embraced this. There is legislation being considered by the, at the state level, but I would anticipate that people who are selling these in our town, which I'm assuming are the liquor stores, are gonna be concerned that they're being singled out when you can go to North Kingston, Narragansett, Charleston, and buy the same items, but can't buy them and cure, or can't sell them in South Kingston.
Yeah.
Or that our stores, our liquor stores, are the source of this litter. Never knew it was an issue until I read the articles, until you pointed them out. Never knew the whole culture behind these things. And I'm not trying to discourage you or the commission from taking a shot at the with the council, but I'm not necessarily optimistic that it's going to be embraced.
It may not.
I was going to add, because Chris, it's a good point in the sense that there is a distinction here versus the plastic bags and even versus the even the straws, because that was really focused on their deployment in the business and they're being encouraged to replace them with an alternative like paper straws or different types of paper bags. But here, it actually addresses the sale of versus just the use of. For instance, you know, at the grocery stores, you can probably still buy plastic straws if you're going to use them at home. But in a restaurant, the restaurant is being encouraged, or really, if it's in effect, to not use plastic straws and make them available to their customers. So I think it may suggest that we may need a new format that addresses this issue about the sale of, and frankly, there may be other products in the future that you would want to add to a list of preventing the sale of versus deployment in the business operation?
Well, we can use deployment or distribution in the same way. I mean, yes, they are sold for money, but they're still being distributed and deployed the same way. And that's what I suspect the wording of the original ordinance would allow. And it wouldn't, I guess it wouldn't preclude them from handing them out for free, but I don't think anyone is going to be doing that. They do make up, I have talked to a couple of managers and one owner of package stores at Sweeney's and Jaber's, and they do constitute a significant amount of their business. I don't know about dollar-wise, but I do know in volume. And well, the volume is sort of attested by all those that have been picked up and, you know, as litter and such. But I do, my actual main thing, I mean, I certainly don't, you know, want anyone to be drinking and driving. And I think these facilitate that. For instance, the idea that once you've thrown out that nip that you just drank, if you buy them in a 10 pack, you still don't have an open alcohol container in your car. So I think that's a very attractive, you know, idea to it, but we can't address that. And for me, having these things get into the waste stream, either through the landfill or being thrown out and not being picked up, but getting into the storm drains down to the river, that to me is even like more important. You know, I know drunk driving is a real serious problem in this state and others, but and I certainly would like, you know, I would approve such a thing on those grounds as well. But having plastic, these damn microplastics get into our soil, our water stream, it's that's really offensive to me.
Yeah, no, I don't have any I have nothing against. I think the objective is certainly a meritorious objective. I was just suggesting that amending the existing regulation, which has a different focus, may not be the best solution if, in fact, you want to provide a platform for banning the sale of other products in the future, because that, to me, is a distinction that that we may want to take advantage of. I mean, for instance, if you, in the article, they mentioned New Mexico, which has put this in place, made some, I guess, surprising distinctions, but they allow, obviously, they allow them on planes, but right. They also allow them at golf courses, for instance, where people are actually operating within the bounds of the property, if you will. You know, that sort of begins to shake out what passed muster, at least in another location. Yep. So I think we could find there are other categories of products that are not environmentally positive that you will want to put in the ban the sale of with restrictions if they are applicable. And maybe that's setting that platform up versus amending the existing one, for which we may have other products in the future there too, without the same burden of not being able to sell.
Well, for instance, I would like to see styrofoam food containers be eliminated. And certainly people, some businesses do use cardboard or waxed cardboard or that such, but it could be argued that, well, they are selling these styrofoam containers. And in, by the same token, I think we could just say maybe alcohol cannot be distributed in these small 50 milliliter containers. I mean, I think the town is certainly going to be conferring with their legal counsel on how this can be, what can't be done. And I wouldn't mind, you know, essentially leaving the details, you know, up to them and up to legal counsel. But I do think that it would be, I mean, because this entire topic is getting so much publicity at this point, I think it's appropriate for us to, you know, write a letter to the council and say, you know, we think that these containers should not be distributed, we can say, should not be because of the way that they're disposed, because they cannot be recycled. They're most commonly thrown out of car windows. They do get into the water stream, and they're not recyclable. And I think if we just made those points, bring it up to the town level, or bringing it down to the town level, and just, you know, throw it out there and see if it floats, you know, see what the reaction is, get it being talked about. But I think as a conservation commission, there are ecological reasons that these should not be out there. And I would, you know, that's where I'm coming from, in other words.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. And just to address what Chris brought up, I think it's a valid concern, and there's no doubt in my mind that people would drive to Narragansett and, or as they're on their way through Narragansett, get nips that then still wind up in South Kingstown. Two things on that front. This article points out that municipalities have adopted these ordinances, Chelsea, Newton, Mashpee, Falmouth, Wareham, others. There's not a town in the world that doesn't have another town next to it. And I think it has to start someplace. When I was at the TRC meeting 2 months ago now, there was a gentleman that was also on the panel, whose name I can't recall at the moment, but he, I believe he was involved in some way with Narragansett's equivalent of the Conservation Commission.
Yep.
And he approached me interested in, we were talking about the plastic bag ban, but he was interested in working together, not just on that, but on all kinds of issues, because our towns are so close to each other and because there is so much back and forth between Narragansett and South Kingstown. So whether we went forward with this, presented this letter to the, is it the zoning board or the town council? Whether we went forward first and just got an idea of how that was going to go over, or if we conferred with Narragansett beforehand. And then I think in either case, we should speak with equivalent bodies in Narragansett. And hopefully if this passed in SK, Narragansett could follow shortly thereafter. I think we have to start someplace. And I think it's worth, to David's point, I think there's a lot of attention on this statewide at the moment, and just using that fire that already exists. I think it's an opportune time.
Matt, I also think it's a good idea that if we do decide to write this letter to the town council, that we let the Narragansett Conservation Commission know that we're doing this, and even send them a draft, let them know what our talking points are, and see what happens. I also think we could do the same thing to North Kingstown. But I do think we should move forward, but I think letting them know that this is happening, this is being considered, that our CONCOM is behind it, the more bodies, the better.
Right. And I think a town like South Kingstown is a good place for it to start. I think it has a good chance of, I think there's a lot of public support in SK for it.
I agree.
But also it pointed out in this article was that on a state to state basis, if you banned it statewide, the same concern was being expressed that people would go over the border to the next state. That's a bigger hurdle to, if you as a state pass it, to then bring an entire other state along with you. Whereas the challenge that we face of just getting a neighboring town to come along, that might be an easier way to sort of start that spread from the inside towards the borders in Rhode Island.
Another thing too is that when I'm out picking up litter, you know, people stop me all the time and we talk about it. And since, you know, getting involved with this through the Friends of the Saugatucket, there are a lot of people in town who are picking up litter and picking up these things. And I think a lot of people are, and a lot of people, by the way, walk, jog, and bicycle. And that's when you really start to see the problem. And I think there's going to be public support for this. And
Two other people, not counting David and Bill. I know two other people who also have collections, maybe not as big as Bill's, but who are acquiring there.
His is a mission. But if we do decide to, you know, write a letter and petition the council, I would be happy to, you know, contact the local papers and let them know that, you know, we're doing this. And, you know, just to get, you know, more public support, maybe there'd be letters to the editor. I don't know. But I think the time is good to do this. If we want to.
Do we know how many liquor stores are in the boundaries of South Kingstown?
Four, to my knowledge. It's interesting because you're allowed licenses, one liquor store for every 6,000 people. And I believe we're right around 30,000. So I think there could be another one coming up. But I can think of four, and only four right now. So,
yeah, there are four. You may, in terms of speaking to people or groups, you may want to talk to Economic Development Commission. I know we did that on the plastic bag side. But what I envision, just trying to think down the road, if this matter were to come before the town council, that the people that would be objecting are the people that own the liquor stores.
And yes,
it's not just that we're directing them out of town per se, but it's the unintended consequences that right, it's affecting their bottom line.
Oh, it is. Right? Yes, I know it will. Yep.
No.
No, that's true. Well, I actually wrote up some survey questions, but I've only been able to ask them of one manager of Sweeney's and the owner of Jaber's. Otherwise, I've never seen the owners of the other two. So, and technically, I haven't spoken to the owner of Sweeney's either. So, but yeah, I mean, I wrote up the questions. I passed them out to a couple of people who are willing to walk into the stores and ask them, but we haven't been able to find the actual owners. So, but one of the managers I spoke to says, "Oh, it's a lot. It's a lot of their business." And I said, "What do you think the consequences would be?" He says, "Well, would they support such a prohibition or such an amendment?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. I can't speak for him, but I'd say probably not." And I suspect that's going to be a universal response. It does represent, well, looking at the numbers that we're picking up, it represents a significant amount of business and money. And it's ironic, by the way, that if you count the ounces or milliliters in a 10-pack, which is how they're often sold, if you converted those milliliters to a bottle containing the same amount, it's cheaper to buy the 10 nips, which is crazy. It encourages people to buy these small things because they're sold in such volume. I mean, it's a crazy business, and it's a scourge. That's a scourge. So does anybody else have any other thoughts on whether to proceed or how to proceed or on the idea of writing a letter to the council? I'd like to have some direction, you know, going forward here. If we did want to address the council, I would propose that given the talking points that have come up, I would write a draft letter, send it out to everyone for comments via email, and rewrite and rewrite as necessary until we have something that we want to actually vote on, whether it be in March or April, you know, just to move the process on. But I want to know consensus of the, you know, commission here. If we do want to go forward in that direction, does anybody have any other thoughts, such as not going forward for whatever reason, that kind of thing?
No, I think we should go forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Mary? Mary?
I think that was a yes. Oops, oh, she's muted now.
Okay. All right. Well, I will draw up a draft letter, send it out, get some comments from you all. And as soon as you know, we get this going, we'll have a draft that we can vote on at hopefully in the next meeting, if not the meeting after. Does anyone from the public have any comments? Okay. I'll entertain a motion that we move forward with a draft letter to the town council addressing the amendment to the plastic reduction ordinance regarding 50 milliliter liquor bottles. Do I hear a motion?
I move to accept.
Okay.
Motion made by Lorraine. Do I hear a second?
I will second it.
Thank you, Matt. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, guys. Our next order of business is correspondence and public comment. I have some correspondence, namely that I received an actual letter through the mail from Watershed Watch thanking us for our contribution for the water quality testing. And I was very impressed, you know, that somebody took the time to actually write out a letter and put it in the mail with a stamp. And it was very cool. The other correspondence I have not had was from the Sustainability Committee after emailing the chair regarding the idea of having a community compost. I don't know if I was expecting one or not, but just to report that I had spoken with him, I mentioned at the last meeting, I have not heard a response. So that's all. Jay, do you have any other correspondence?
I don't have any correspondence.
Okay. Do we have any other public comment on any other subject or any subject at all?
We have a member of the public with their hand raised, Marlena.
Please go ahead.
Hi, are you able to hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I did send a letter via email, so I'll follow up to make sure that gets out to everybody. I apologize, I may not have sent it to the correct location. But if it's okay, I just wanted to make a few comments tonight.
Please.
Okay. So good evening. And my name is Marlena Peabody. I'm a South Kingstown resident and I live on Ministerial Road. I want to start by thanking you for your service to the town and for listening to my comments tonight. I want to make a few comments on the tentative purchase and sales agreement between the South Kingstown Land Trust and the town of South Kingstown for the purposes of building an EMS facility on a small plot of donated land at the corner of Ministerial and Post Road. I first want to acknowledge that my strong opposition to this plan does not reflect my appreciation for the town's first responders. I'm incredibly grateful for the town's first responders and I'm thankful for the work that they do. I live about 500 feet from the proposed location of the new EMS facility. The property that I live on was purchased by my late parents in the 1970s. And my family has lived on this property ever since. I have spent my entire childhood and most of my adult life living on this property. For decades, the plot of land in question has remained undeveloped and has been used for a variety of agricultural purposes over the years, a space for goats to graze or a place to farm. Last summer, the land was planted and a farm stand was set up. In November, the land was planted again for the spring by a neighbor. As many people sought new ways to live and survive during the COVID-19 pandemic, I adopted daily walks. I walk by this plot of land every day, and I'm always interested to see what I can find. If I'm lucky enough, I can see owls in the trees, red-tailed hawks circling looking for mice, foxes, rabbits, and deer. Sometimes I will see a few neighborhood cats hanging out between the historic stone walls on the property. I believe that the beauty of Ministerial Road and many parts of South Kingstown is the natural beauty, especially in the seemingly rare places that have been preserved for conservation and have allowed for the local ecology to flourish. I have enjoyed living on Ministerial Road because of this, and the prospect of additional development is very scary for me. Since the announcement, I have been forced to consider the need to sell my property if further development occurs. And again, it's very scary for me. I urge you to help support and conserve this land and find an alternative location from an EMS facility that is not in a residential area and does not rely on the sale of land that was donated to the land trust for the purposes of development. With all the uncertainty we face today and with the COVID-19 pandemic, with the economy, I want to be able to count on something that will remain and continue to help future generations. And I believe that starts with land conservation and ecological preservation. Thank you again for your time tonight. And again, thank you for your service to the town.
Thank you for coming forward. I miss those goats. I know I haven't seen them for a while, but they were a main attraction. I miss them. Jay, where do we stand with the town's purchase on this? And can we make a recommendation to the town council?
First of all, I don't know what the status of the entire situation is at the moment. I would advise you all, though, that this topic is not on the agenda. It's not an item that can be, that should be discussed necessarily. And also, there is no application before you to weigh in any capacity. There is no application at all that exists at the moment. So my advice to you all is that there really is not much that you can comment on at this time, particularly because it's not on the agenda. And if at some point this gets further along, we can reassess as to what type of input the Conservation Commission could provide.
Could we ask you to look into where the process is for the town actually completing this sale?
I can try to find that information out.
Okay, great. Okay.
I believe there's a public hearing scheduled for it coming up at the land trust property. It would be appropriate for any of us who are interested to attend that meeting.
Are you at the risk of opening or furthering this discussion? Could someone just clarify who the current owner of the property is? It's owned by the South Kingstown Land Trust, and the town of South Kingstown is proposing purchasing it. I'm completely unfamiliar with.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Check out South County Independent. Matt gives a pretty good description of what's going on.
All right. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Chris, was that a recent article or?
I don't know how recent. I periodically check the Independent online. And okay. I know they've run articles or updates. I don't know how up to date it is.
Okay.
Nor do I know all the details, but
yep.
I've read enough.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Well, thank you. Um, update from staff on planning department activities, Jay?
I don't have anything really that's Conservation Commission aligned. We're working our way through applications. We don't have any for you guys to review at the moment. Trying to deal with a little bit of a backlog to begin the year. Hopefully we'll clear out most of them by the end of this month, probably most likely into early March. And that's about it. There's not much else to report.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I would just, if David was about to end the meeting, sneak in the comment that we are still looking for another member, another seat to be filled.
Yep. I did see a public notice. I was told that public notices go out once a month in the paper, in the Narragansett Times. And I saw that notice. It's rather inconspicuous. I don't know how many people would see it. I think what's going to happen is it's going to be word of mouth from one of us talking to someone who either initiating conversation, like, I know who would be really good, and then addressing that person saying, hey, we've had a vacancy here, and then describe, you know, what these meetings are like and how much homework we have to do. And I mean, compared to being on the planning board, this is really a great meeting. And so I think it's going to have to be word of mouth, and we just really have to, you know, be thinking about this as a, you know, because I think that's it's going to have to happen. I'm sort of surprised it's been this long that we've had a vacancy, that there haven't been, you know, applications backed up at the town clerk's office. But in fact, there haven't. So we have to be a little more active about this, proactive. So thank you, Matt, for bringing that up. Our next meeting date is March 1st. And if anybody has any agenda contributions, either let Jay or me know, and it'll be on the agenda. Let's see. Matt, you probably have a report from the last CRC.
One would think that I might. However, I don't have my notes from that meeting in front of me. It feels like it was a very long time ago. Just off the top of my head, I think that maybe 4 out of 5 of the things discussed were continuations from the November meeting that you had attended, David. And nothing was concluded at that meeting either. So cans were kicked down the road. I apologize. I don't have my notes from that meeting in front of me.
And for the, the January meeting, is that the one you were attending, or was that December?
It was the December meeting that I went to, yeah.
And Mary, were you at the January meeting?
I went to the January meeting, David, yes.
Okay, and anything of note?
Here's what happened. The Matunic Beach condominiums were tabled till February, and the Burger King us to submit a landscape plan to plant larger plants, and they will be sent to the planning board review. And the 471 High Street has been sent to the planning board.
Interesting, because there were so many things that were off about that project, such as the plans were not accurate to what the actual site is, and all that stuff got ironed out, in other words.
471 High Street, it turned out that it was rather complicated, but it was not the current owner problem. It was belonged to the previous owner, so they decided that this was going to be a pretty much major improvement, so they would send it to the planning board.
There was also an issue about the driveway or the asphalt, the parking lot, I guess.
Right, that is somewhat still contentious because it does exceed the amount of asphalt permitted for the drainage in the area. So that they're working on following up with the previous owner to do something about the asphalt, but they did send it to the planning
board. I think it was put in without permit.
Yes.
Correct. For the February 9th TRC, Vern, do you want to do that?
I can cover that. I guess I'm coming. We're closing the cycle, I guess.
Yes. Okay, great. So Jay, you'll send the materials to Vern.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Before we adjourn, does anybody else have any other miscellaneous comments, things to bring up at all? Otherwise, our next meeting is March 1st, and hearing nothing else, I will adjourn the meeting at 7:28. Thank you very much.
Pardon me? Chris, Conservation Commission uniforms? We got.
Yes. Obviously, the rest did not get the memo.
Right.
But I have that in my closet. I'll go get it
before next time.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Jay, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
All right.